want to say something to everybody that's here. And I mentioned so many people are going different places. It's so important that every single person that's here is here. And a lot of people have traded doing what's easy and doing what's convenient and going places where they're it's more of a social atmosphere than doing what's right and worshiping God as you're supposed to. And I appreciate the fact that you are putting first things first and doing what's right, especially in a time when so many have chosen not to do that in our world. And you are commended for that, and God blesses you for that in a variety of ways. And so you should be, again, commended for making right choices. Revelation 22 has to be one of the most positive chapters in the Bible. We've had, and when we finish next week or the following week with Revelation, we'll kind of sum up things. But we've had a great journey through this last book in the Bible. Learned a lot about what it would be like to live in the first century if you were a Christian and the persecutions they were undergoing. And so at the very end of this book, while most of the book describes, matter of fact, the vast amount of the book describes things that were happening in the first century and soon after, here at the very end of the book, we see, of course, the judgment scene, Christ coming back, and we see, of course, those who are evil being cast into the lake of fire, those who have done right and have lived right and been faithful, getting to enjoy the pleasures of heaven. And of course, we saw part of that in Revelation 21, and that continues into Revelation 22, at least the first half of that, or approximately the first half of Revelation 22. So it's a further description of that New Jerusalem, that condition, state, place, however we want to describe it, where the faithful will get to live eternally in the presence of God. And that's the greatest part of heaven, is being in His presence. More about that later. Revelation chapter 22, let's start in verse 1. Let's look at the first two verses of Revelation 22. And He showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding from the throne of God and of the Lamb. And in the middle of its street, on either side of the river, was the tree of life, which bore 12 fruits, each tree yielding its fruit every month. The leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. And a tremendous amount of blessings are apparent in those two verses. But just hitting on a few things, we see this river of life that is coming out of the throne of God and of the Lamb. It's interesting that I believe that is the first place in the entire Bible that talks about that. Here we come throughout the Bible until we get to the very end of it, the last chapter. Now, we see a lot about the throne of God and all the things. Here it's said to be the throne of God and the throne of Christ, the Lamb, together. It's both of their thrones, which is interesting that we just now see that. So the kingdom, and of course that's what a throne is about, right? Someone who reigns on a throne is reigning over a kingdom. So this kingdom is both the Father's and the Son's. Read with me Ephesians chapter 5, verse 5. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 5, and we'll see this idea of the kingdom. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 5. Paul writes, "For this you know, that no fornicator, unclean person, nor covetous man who's an idolater has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God." So the kingdom is, in some respects, both of theirs. So here we have this picture in heaven of this pure river of water of life that's coming from the throne of God and of the Lamb. And it's interesting that he pictures this. And remember, a lot of these two verses go back to Genesis chapters 2 and 3, right? Garden of Eden. Very similar imagery. Of course, in the Garden of Eden, It was physical. And there were physical waters in the sense that watered everything. There were physical trees, physical, all of these things were physical. Now John goes back to the very, very beginning of the Bible, very beginning of time, and uses a similar imagery to describe what heaven's going to be like. Adam and Eve lost all of those things, didn't they? The Garden of Eden. They lost being able to partake of the tree of life, being in God's presence in a way that people after Adam and Eve had not been. So Adam and Eve got to be in God's presence in a way other people hadn't. But then they lost all of that through their sin. And so while it was lost, now it's been regained. And some of you may have read Paradise Lost, Paradise Regained. That's the idea here. Paradise was lost back in Eden through sin. Now it's been gained by the Lamb. And so people can now enjoy that type of life in God's presence, the presence of the tree of life, because of what the Lamb has done. And so he uses that same picture, that same image to describe heaven. So we have the throne of God and of the Lamb, water of life that nourishes, helps people, aids people, assists us in whatever way, coming from the throne. And then in the middle of the street, and the street was talked about last week, was this tree of life. And of course, the tree of life back in the Garden of Eden sustained them and gave them life, right? That was its purpose. If you go back to Genesis 2 and 3, it sustained them. And as long as they had access to the tree of life, Adam and Eve would have lived forever. But again, they lost that. And so now we see in heaven that's been regained, that's been restored. And so we now can live forever. And not just in a physical Eden, a physical paradise, but we get to live in God's presence right before His throne. And He talks more about what that's going to be like in a minute. And so this tree of life is said to yield 12 fruits. The leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. Well, that's what the tree of life was for back in the Garden of Eden, right? They had access to it, and so they were living in a paradise because of it. No problems of any kind. They had plenty of everything. But sin took it all away. But now in heaven, it's been all restored. It's been regained. So we think about, again, paradise lost, Genesis chapters 2 and 3, paradise regained, Revelation 21 and 22. And so in between the beginning of Genesis and the end of Revelation, we see God's great plan of redemption that was set in motion so that paradise could be regained. And I think it's a great way of thinking about this wonderful book. And there shall be no more curse, but the throne of God and of the Lamb, notice it's mentioned again, but the throne of God and of the Lamb, they're both there, they're sharing it, shall be in it, and His servants shall serve Him. Well, I know one thing we're going to do in heaven. What? We're going to serve God. In what capacity? It doesn't say. It really doesn't give any hint. It just says His servants shall serve Him. So whatever that means, it means that's going to be part of what we do in heaven. Is we're going to be serving Him. And we're going to consider it to be one of the greatest blessings imaginable. I think a lot of Christians, and I mean that in the most exclusive sense, the sense that the Bible talks about it, wouldn't like heaven because they don't even like serving God now. Why would they like serving God eternally if they don't like serving God in this life? I don't think they would. Because in heaven, that's going to be part of what we do. We're going to serve God. And there's not going to be any curse there. Think about how many curses God put on things and people. You know, He put a curse on Adam so that it was going to be difficult now, once he was kicked out of the Garden of Eden, to produce what he needed to eat. Going to have the sweat of his face. There was a curse put on Eve. Childbearing was now going to be much more difficult than it would have been otherwise. And curse put upon Satan, the serpent, right? He did walk on legs, now, or walk on something, I guess legs. and then he was cursed, and then he'd have to slither on the ground, and just all of these things, just curse. Curse put on Cain. Mark put on Cain. So curse after curse after curse throughout the Bible. There was a curse of the law, right? Jesus came and got rid of the curse of the law. And so many curses in the Bible. And he says here, one thing about heaven, there's not going to be any more curses of any kind. All removed. Another blessing about heaven, verse 4. They shall do what? They shall see His face, and His name shall be on their foreheads. This is a very, very familiar part of the book of Revelation, is the fact that they will have His name on their foreheads. They'll get to see His face. The Bible repeatedly says that men have not seen the face of God. It says that in the Old Testament, says that in the New Testament, several places. So we know that no man has seen, literally, God. Jesus said one of the things He came to do when He became flesh was to present God to man so that people would better understand what God was like. Not what He looked like physically, but what God was like, His nature. And Jesus said, that's one of the things I came to do. But in heaven, none of that will be necessary because we'll actually get to see Him face to face, be in His presence, be with Him in a way that it's impossible to be with Him in this world. And that, again, I think is the greatest blessing of all. And certainly to people suffering in the first century, I can't imagine what that would mean to them. It would be great. What else does he say? There shall be no night there. We talked about that already from chapter 21. They need no lamp nor light of the sun, for the Lord God gives them light, and they shall reign forever and ever. No need for light, lamps. Nothing like that. There's not going to be any darkness. We talked last Sunday night about darkness is a time when people tend to fear more. Darkness throughout the Bible has represented, ignorance, sin, evil, Satan. No darkness in heaven. Also it says, and they shall reign forever and ever. Reign forever and ever. That's a never-ending reign. So we're going to be reigning with God, in some respects, forever, through eternity. So there is a regal aspect of heaven as well. What does that entail? I really don't know. It just says we're going to be doing that. So since he says we're going to do it, then I know we're going to be doing it, because he says that. We're going to be reigning with him forever. Then he says, these words are faithful and true. And the Lord God of the holy prophets sent his angel to show his servants the things which must shortly take place. We have emphasized and emphasized and then emphasized some more that most all of Revelation was about things that were going to start to take place very soon. The first three chapters talk about conditions then in those seven churches. What was happening then? And then beginning with Revelation chapter 4 and moving all the way through Revelation chapter 20, we saw various ways of describing how God was going to bring down that evil Roman Empire. And it was pictured in so many different ways. And how he was going to do it. We talked about how he was going to do it through natural disasters and how he was going to do it by enemies of the Roman Empire coming in to destroy the empire, like the Parthians that lived on the east and so forth. And then we talked about how moral decadence, the immorality that was so prevalent in the Roman Empire, was going to bring it down. God was going to allow all those things and orchestrate it so that His people's arch enemy would be destroyed. And of course they were. And destroyed to the extent that they would never be another Roman Empire. And of course there never has been since. The Bible says there never will be either. There's not going to be another Roman Empire like that one in the first century. So we've seen how that has all taken place through this book. And he says these things are faithful and true. You can count on them. On Wednesday night we've talked about so many different so-called prophets that have claimed to have had visions from Smith and Rutherford and Russell and all these others who claim to have had visions about things and none of them were faithful and true. Here we have one that says, this is faithful and true. You can count on it. Behold, I'm coming quickly, verse 7. Blessed is he who keeps the words of the prophecy of this book. This is one of the books in the Bible that talks about people being blessed. There are seven of these Beatitudes in the book of Revelation. Blessed is the one that does this. Blessed is the one that does that. Here's the sixth one that's mentioned in the book. The sixth blessing, the sixth blessed, the sixth Beatitude. And it says, he who keeps the words of the prophecy of this book. And think about how many have not done that. Just think about how many have not kept the words of the prophecy of this book. But he says, you're going to be blessed if you do. And so this is from the perspective of Jesus. He says, I'm coming quickly. And when he does come, it's going to be sudden. How many times does the Bible talk about how Jesus is going to come suddenly, without warning, no announcement? And that's what he means. There aren't going to be any signs to tell people. There's nothing to be looking for out in the world to give any indication at all that Jesus is coming. That's why Jesus repeatedly says, be prepared. Now, after seeing all that and hearing all that, this is what John says in verse 8. Now, I, John, saw and heard these things, and when I heard and saw, I fell down to worship before the feet of the angel who showed me these things. Then he said to me, see that you do not do that, for I am your fellow servant, and of your brethren the prophets, and of those who keep the words of this book. Worship God. There's a tremendous lesson in that. This is an angel, isn't it? I fell down to worship before the feet of an angel. That would be pretty natural, right? John seeing and experiencing all this, and he's just so overwhelmed that what does he do? He just falls down to worship the one that's been revealing all of this to him. And the angel says, do not do that. I am not worthy to be worshipped. He says, essentially, there's only one that's worthy of worship, worthy of reverence, worthy of awe. And he says what? Worship God. Think about how many people today worship people and worship angels and give special titles to people, like reverend, most holy reverend. And on and on and on the titles go. I remember one time a particular church in South Springfield, when we lived there years ago. We would go by it for a long time. It said the Right Reverend so-and-so, whatever his name was. And that was the way it was for years. And then one day it changed, and he had been lifted up. Now he was the Very Right Reverend so-and-so. So whatever he had done, he had been elevated now from a right reverend to a very right reverend. Well, the Bible here says don't do that. Jesus even said that himself. He says don't call people by those names. Don't call them master. Don't call them rabbi. Don't call them those religious titles. So there's only one worthy of being worshipped, and this angel says worship God and him only. So he says to me, do not seal the words of the prophets of this book, for the time is at hand. Don't seal it. This book has a lot about seals, right? Remember when John first saw the scroll, what was it? It was sealed, and he started to weep, right? He was sad because no one was able to open the seals. Well, what did that signify? Well, going all the way back to chapters 4, 5, and 6 that talk about that, when something was sealed, it was not revealed. It wasn't something that people could understand. So someone had to come along, open it, reveal it, so people could know it. Well, now he says, he tells John, don't seal it. People need to know these things. Now, there were some things in the Bible that God says were sealed, and that's the way they were kept. They were never opened. I think there are some things in the book of Daniel that talk about that. But here, he says, do not seal the words of this prophecy. Why? For the time is at hand. People need to know that now. They needed to know it then. He who is unjust, let him be unjust still. And those words, if we don't take the context into account, they will teach something that the Bible definitely does not want taught. He who is filthy, let him be filthy still. He who is righteous, let him be righteous still. He who is holy, let him be holy still. The Bible always talks about only two groups of people, right? There's the holy, there's the unholy. There's the good and the evil, the righteous, the unrighteous, and on and on. Two groups of people. And it's always been like that, and it's always going to be like that. But each individual chooses which group he belongs to. I get to choose, and you get to choose which group you belong to. And the state in which we die, and this is his point, of course. Remember, he's looking at, this is heaven and hell time. Judgment's past. People aren't living on the earth. People aren't making choices anymore. Their destiny's been determined. And that's what this is about. Someone dies filthy, they're going to be filthy in the next life. Someone dies wicked, they're going to be wicked in the next life. Someone dies righteous, they're going to be righteous in the next life. Death is that determining point. That's it. There's no changing once an individual dies. There's no changing of character. There's no changing in one's eternal destiny once one dies. It's set, it's fixed, it's final. So the person who is unjust in his life is going to be unjust in the afterlife. Filthy, righteous, holy, the same way. So in eternity, we're going to have the exact same type of character that we have in this world. It is not going to be changed. Nothing is going to change that in any way. He says, and behold, again, this is Jesus, says, I am coming quickly. He already said that up a few verses above. And my reward is with me to give to everyone according to his work. Think about how many times Jesus has said, or the apostles or the writers has said, that your reward is going to be based on your work, what you do. I mean, I can't imagine how many times the Bible talks about that. We're going to stand before the judgment seat of Christ and be judged according to what we have done in this life. Does it make a difference? It sure does. Make a difference whether we attend worship services? It absolutely does. Does it make any difference whether I'm honest or not? It sure does. On and on and on. It makes a difference how I live. My works follow me, right? That's what Jesus said in this book itself. My works, your works, will follow you. And they will. And he says, I'm coming quickly in the sense of that when I come, it's going to be over in a flash. The judgment, the destruction of the world is going to be destroyed in a flash. People's bodies, 1 Corinthians 15, will be changed. Those who are alive, in the wink of an eye, all of that's going to happen that fast. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, the first and the last. Again, we know that's Jesus who is talking. And what a lesson to kind of stop with right there. You know, the condition we are in at death is all important. There's no changing. And since we don't know when we're going to leave this world, that means we have to be prepared at every time. You know, we're all going to wake up one morning, and that's going to be our last morning to wake up. I have no idea when that is for you or me or for anybody, but there is going to be a last morning for every individual. Again, we don't know when that's going to be. So he says, you be prepared because I'm going to come quickly. I'm not going to give you any warning. So if we're alive when he comes, or if we've already passed on before he comes, there's not going to be any warning. So we have to be prepared because we're going to be judged on what we have done, how we have lived. And the condition in which we leave this world is going to be the condition in which we are judged. And it's that simple. That's why we have to be prepared. Well, how do I prepare? Well, first of all, I have to experience the new birth. Like Nicodemus was told to, be born of water and the Spirit. be immersed in water for the forgiveness of my sins. I'm not prepared unless I've done that. I'm also not prepared unless I have done what He has told the churches in Revelation to do. Be faithful even to the point of death. Continue to be faithful. It doesn't matter what other people are doing or what the world's doing. It just makes a difference whether you're faithful or not. That's what's important, because that's how you're going to be judged. How you've lived. If you've been faithful in your life or not. And so that's how we need to be prepared. Be faithful even to the point of death. If you need to respond tonight, please do as we stand and sing this next song.